From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. All this month, we're celebrating women in leadership with our series, Leading Ladies. Today, we combine the world of politics with the world of business. And who better to help us do that than former Secretary of Labor Alexis Herman? Raised in Alabama, Herman saw firsthand the ugly face of discrimination. Her father was a civil rights activist, and he inspired his daughter to follow in his footsteps. After graduating from Xavier University in New Orleans, she went into labor relations, believing that equal wages for equal work were the only way to equal rights. Her efforts caught the eye of then-President Jimmy Carter. Now, Carter tapped Herman to head the Federal Women's Bureau. At 29, she was its youngest director, and Herman used the post to leave a lasting mark on the American workplace. She pushed corporate giants like Coke and GM to hire not only women, but women of color. In 1997, President Clinton named Herman to head the Labor Department, the first African-American in the job. I sat down with Secretary Herman to discuss her distinguished career. She said it all began with her first job when she was just 15 years old.
It was a volunteer experience working in New Orleans in the Desire Housing Projects with young kids there. But for me, I got up and I went to work and I worked with those kids, and so it really wasn't about the money as much as it was about the experience. The value of money started early on for me from my father. I was probably 11 or 12 years old, and my father always gave me, for a Christmas present, a bank. And so I grew up with little piggy banks here and different kind of banks. So I always look forward to getting some kind of a bank at Christmas time. But when I was around 11 or 12, he decided to match what was in my piggy bank. And so for me, learning to save and having an appreciation for putting some of your allowance away and not spending it all was something, the value of money, my father probably instilled in me.
I understand that you had an incident when you were a child with your father, with the Ku Klux Klan. Mm-hmm. Tell us about what happened.
I was 5 years old, and one of the rituals of being with my father on Christmas Eve was going out, looking at the Christmas decorations, and making me sleepy so that I would go to sleep for Santa Claus to come. This particular Christmas Eve, there was a meeting at the church, and I was accustomed by now to going with my father to these sort of small meetings, as we used to say. And sometimes you would know that there was trouble in the air or something going on because people would gather. And when we were leaving, and it was a dirt road, red clay, it was very dark. All of a sudden, these cars came from no place, and they forced my father off the road into the bushes, and they got out of the car, and it was the Klan, and they were dressed in their robes. And my father, I said he was a peaceful man, and he really was, but he always had a gun that had a pearl handle to it that he kept in his car. He said to me, "Get under the dashboard. Don't you move. I'm getting out of this car. I'm going to lock the doors." And he put the gun in my hand. And he said, "If anybody tries to open this door, Poppy wants you to pull the trigger." And so they took him away from the car, and then I heard the noise and the shouts, and it seemed like forever to me. You know, to this day, I don't know how long it lasted. But then after a while, I heard someone saying, "Alexis, Alexis, don't be afraid. It's Father Warren, it's Father Warren." And then very gently, Father Warren opened the door. And that's the priest that we had visited. And he opened the door, and I saw my father. My father had long black hair, and it was bloody and all in his face, and I saw these men carrying him away covered with blood, and I thought he was dead, and I was screaming out, "Papi, Papi, Papi," because they suspected that he might be attacked, Some of the men and Father Warren, who had been in the meeting, had actually decided to follow him. And so thank God that they did, because the Klan obviously scattered when the other men came up in their cars. And my father eventually got over what was a terrible beating that he, you know, got that night. But I've never forgotten it, obviously. And to this day, I can't be around a gun. I mean, I can't even bear the thought, really, of touching a gun. I can still feel that cold handle.
Moving forward, who was your first role model as an adult? I'm talking about someone who's not a family member.
Dr. Dorothy Irene Height, president of the National Council of Negro Women. Dr. Height has been in my life since I was 24 years old, 23 actually turning 24. And she was introduced to me by, believe it or not, Byatt Rustin and A. Philip Randolph. I was then just moving to Atlanta, Georgia, to work on a program that was going to place primarily African-American women in jobs at the managerial level for the first time in the Deep South. Dr. Height was my introduction to a very different world, and a black woman outside of my family who was just doing it, you know, and she was so smart, and she had so much history. She just opened a world to me that I, quite frankly, didn't know existed. And in part, that's what mentors are all about.
So how did you do in that job? Were you successful in trying to change the ability of black women to get into key positions?
We were very successful. And I say we because it really was a team effort of a group of terrific women who were committed to our charge. We got the first African-American woman in a managerial job as a chemist at the Coca-Cola Company. This was the early 70s. The first professional at Delta Airlines. She was an accountant. We got the first professional in a managerial job hired at General Motors. She went into labor relations, the Southern Bell Company. I could go on and on and on with those early pioneers, those women who were the breakthroughs. And, you know, that's what it takes, you know. You have to know that it's possible. And once you can overcome those barriers, those initial barriers, then others know it's possible.
What did it mean to you to take the job of labor secretary? What was your vision for how you were going to go in and shape that position, that historic position for an African American? And did you ever hit a wall where you were like, you know what, I have busted through so many walls, but I'm not getting through this one?
Mm-hmm. Well, for me, I always said going back home was what labor was all about for me. I had been there in my 20s. I was President Carter's youngest appointee when I was the director of the Women's Bureau at the Labor Department with then Secretary of Labor Ray Marshall. So I knew the Labor Department. I loved the issues. I loved the people there. And I often say it, in terms of being the first African-American, for a country that was literally built on slave labor, to be able to go back and to help all who labor, and to really to focus on those, especially who had been left out of our economic prosperity. I wanted to work particularly with those individuals in the labor market, and to give them the skills to be successful in the future, and to make that a part of my platform, really, as labor secretary. So I focused a lot on disadvantaged youth, non-traditional job experiences, and what we could do to open those up. I was always very concerned about the safety of workers and the environment in which we worked, particularly growing up in the South. And I was very proud that we did have the safest record in terms of workplace safety in the history of the Labor Department. So there was much that we felt good about.
I'm sure that you must mentor people today because you're that kind of person. So what do you tell women that you're mentoring today if they hit a glass ceiling or people are discounting their abilities? What kind of a pep talk or a reality check do you give them?
Well, reality check is, you know, don't ever accept failure as an option, but to understand that we learn from our mistakes, and you can't let others define you. You know, when you say to thine own self be true and to have confidence in yourself and your abilities, you're setting the standard. You're defining what it should be and what it's going to take. Don't buy into the stereotypes. That's their issue. That's not your issue. Beyond that, I think it's important when you are climbing the career ladder, and I say this particularly to young people today, we have to know the importance of taking risk. It's not like you just step out one day and say, oh, I'm going to take a risk. You have to get into the habit of risk-taking. And the more you do that, the more you can learn to push that envelope. It gets easier the next time. And the butterflies are calmer the next time around in your stomach. But it's something that you have to get into the habit of doing. It's not necessarily a one-time experience, and voila, you get it. The second thing that I think is important is you really do have to have mentors. You do have to have people who have a sense of the world, different points of views. I don't believe in having just one or two mentors. I think you need mentors that have different life experiences across race lines, across gender lines, so that you learned the world through these different lenses. You know, that's very important. And surround yourself with positive people, because there's so many people who are willing to put you down. The crabs in the barrel theory is real, okay? Let's be honest, it's real. So make sure you've got people that are going to lift you up, encourage you, and affirm your own potential.
Well, Secretary Herman, it's been a delight.
Thank you.
Again, that was former Secretary of Labor Alexis Herman. And we've posted several online-only audio clips at our website, where you can hear Herman talk about her college days in New Orleans. That's at npr.org. Just ahead, a confession in the 9/11 attacks, and historians discover ties between pirate ships and slave vessels.